Happy December 11th or 12th, everybody. This is Smart Mouth. I am your host, Catherine Spires. And this week, we are all about cookies. I'm going to tell you the history of chocolate chip cookies, and I'm announcing the three winners of the Smart Mouth Cookie Contest. Their recipes are also going to be posted on smartmouthpodcast.com and on the Smart Mouth group on Facebook. Not the page, but the group, which you can request access to. For the contest, I worked with past podcast guests, Josh Scherer and Danielle Salmon, to pick three winning recipes, which was so arduous, as you can imagine. The prize packages for the winning recipes include King Arthur Flour gift cards and books by past Smart Mouth guests, Gail Simmons and Marcus Samuelson and Mimi Pond, as well as a cookbook and a tin of cookies from Milk Bar, and a collection of cherry black pepper and tamarind ginger vinegar drinking shrubs from a company out of Utah called Saintly Shrubs. So it's some pretty good prizes. We got a bunch of entries. We had to narrow it down to three. Let's kick it off with announcing one of the winners, Andrea Ulich of Germany. She sent in her nut bar recipe. Those are called Nusseken. And I'm sure that I mispronounced so much of that sentence, so I apologize. But these bars involve almonds and hazelnuts and apricot jam and dark chocolate, which obviously is a lot of really tasty stuff. These happen to be Danielle's favorite, by the way. And I want to say that as with all bar cookies, they really taste best about 2 or 3 days after they're baked. As opposed to chocolate chip cookies, which I think are best pretty much straight out of the oven. For some context, cookies, in the sense of round sweet treats, came from the Middle East and Persia about 2,000 years ago, as far as we can tell. It was grains and flours mixed with eggs and dairy products and fruit and honey. No sugar yet. The Arabic food came into Europe via Spain in the Middle Ages, and it moved north. And then it combined with the word in Dutch for small cake, cookie. The early European settlers in what would become the United States used the word cookie instead of saying biscuit, as they did in Great Britain. The idea being that they really wanted to stick it to Britain, I guess. I don't know. But obviously, there were a lot of Dutch people in the early American colonies as well. So that's probably explains that word choice. We're going to move forward 100 years. But first, let's get to the second winner. Colin Matthew of Portland, Oregon. Yay! He sent in a recipe for cookies that are called salted mudslide cookies. Pretty dramatic. They have cocoa powder and instant coffee and chocolate chunks and Kahlua in them. And these were my personal favorite. But they were controversial because there's an option to add crushed candy canes to these cookies, which led to a lot of yelling in my kitchen with my co-judges. And we decided that they're better without just a whole cup of chocolate chunks instead of half and half. But the recipe does call for a little bit of post-bake salt sprinkling, which everyone agreed with. So let's talk about home ec for a bit. Home economics. I feel like it's much maligned, and a lot of people associate it with easy A high school electives. But the first home economics department in the US was founded at Kansas State University in 1873. So most of these early home economics departments were at land grant colleges. And these were public schools in the U.S. that allowed women, unlike the hoity-toity East Coast private schools. Another thing that was different is that these schools didn't focus on training students for white-collar professions the way that places like Harvard and Princeton did. They wanted to have a bunch of lawyers and presidents and ministers graduating from their schools. But at the land grant colleges, they were focused on more practical skills like agriculture and other sciences. And home economics as a department was also linked with a growing idea in the United States that higher education should be available to female students. A woman named Ellen Swallow Richards, she was considered one of the sort of founders of the discipline. She actually was the first female student at MIT. This was in 1871. But she was sort of allowed to just audit the classes. She didn't pay tuition, but they also didn't count her as an official student. She had to study away from the rest of the students, even in the labs. She had to go sit in the corner, not be in the front, and not, you know, distract the male students. So a lot of schools at the time, not MIT, but a lot of the schools that were actually teaching Helm economics, some of them were really science focused in their departments. And some of them were more like, this is what ladies do. So it depended on the college that you went to, what kind of home economic education you'd be getting. And even though home ec was offered to and open to all students at a college, for whatever reason, it wasn't very popular for the male students. So it largely became the domain of female students. Some home ec departments even got political. So Berkeley had a class called The Household as Economic Agent. And in the 1910s, Cornell offered classes called things like Women in Industry and Woman and the State. So some of them were getting, you know, pretty political, others not. So what kind of work could you go into after you had got your home economics degree? A lot of the graduates went into marketing, but a lot of them actually started working in the industries that produced items that you might use in your kitchen. For instance, a woman who was a professor at Mansfield State Teachers College, her name was Lucy Maltby, and she hit up Corning Glassware. That's the company that makes Pyrex, which is still famous and considered almost indispensable in U.S. kitchens, at least. And she, in 1929, went to them and said, you know, your product is very outdated. Kitchens have changed and your product hasn't changed with it. Let me tell you how to fix it. So she drew them a whole new line that became the Pyrex that we know today. And then she was hired by Corning Glassware to keep doing that, essentially. So that was the kind of job that you could get. You could also write recipes for places like Campbell and Kellogg. A lot of different options. For instance, there is a woman named Ruth Graves Wakefield. And she graduated from Framingham State Normal School in the Department of Household Arts in 1924. And after graduation, she worked as both a dietitian and a lecturer until 1930, when with her husband, she bought a lodge in Whitman, Massachusetts. And that lodge was called the Toll House Inn. So when people talk about the origins of chocolate chip cookies, they do the horrible thing that often happens where they say it was an accident. And I just want to really drive home the idea that that is wrong, because Ms. Wakefield was trained in the culinary arts. She created chocolate chip cookies entirely on purpose. And we know that she did it probably in the 1930s because she published a cookbook in 1938 that included the recipe for chocolate chip cookies. But it wasn't until World War II, when people started sending care packages to soldiers, that chocolate chip cookies really took off. And then for some reason, she made what I think was probably a huge mistake. She gave Nestle the rights to the recipe entirely for free. And she was still alive in the 1950s when refrigerated tubes of cookie dough started appearing in supermarkets. So she probably realized her mistake, and it's such a bummer that she didn't get to get a financial reward for it, essentially. But of course, we all tip our hats to her because she created something wonderful and something that is beloved by college students everywhere. The refrigerated version. But you can make your own cookies. For instance, you could make sugar cookies, like those made by our third winner, Linda Brandmeier of British Columbia. Now, her recipe stood out to me because it included sour cream. That seemed pretty fun, pretty indulgent, so I made them. They were excellent. They were Josh's favorite because they had the best dough, which he said was the key element of any cookie. And he's not wrong. Thank you so much to everyone who entered the contest. And again, the three winning recipes will also be posted on smartmouthpodcast.com and on the Smart Mouth group, not the page, but the group, on Facebook. Everyone check them out and make them. December is the perfect time for cookies. Thanks, everybody. Sugar. Oh, honey, honey.